everybody. We're back.
I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And, gosh, it's a lovely last day in March. Rainy, cloudy, deliciously unpleasant. And we're making the best of it here. It was nicer earlier today. But change is good, and contrast is good, I think. Anyway, so let's move on to the next part of the program, which I think will be a little bit tastier. I have been working on getting this next person on the program for a long time, so I'm glad that we are able to use the magic of technology and make this happen. We're going to be speaking with Julia Barnard, the author of a cookbook, Vegan Tapas. And just briefly, life changed for Julia Barnard in 2003 when she moved from the UK to Adelaide, Australia. She set up her own counseling practice and discovered a love of cooking. Through her counseling work, she embraced positive psychology and the science of happiness. She has written many articles on the happiness and well-being, which are published on her popular website, makethechange.com.au. She's authored the workbook Promoting Happiness, and she's also has a vegetarian cookbook, Vegetarian Tapas, and now we're going to be talking a little bit about vegan tapas and probably a little bit more than that. Julia, how are you?
I'm good.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good evening to you.
Well, I was looking for vegan tapas, and I was very excited when I found you. And I love that we're able to just talk like this, you in Australia and me in New York. I just get so tickled that we can do that.
I agree. I think it's great, the fact that I don't have to travel anywhere. And I may or may not be in my pajamas right now.
That's right. Well, you know, before we talk about vegan tapas, I just want to talk about this this happiness thing, this science of happiness. Can you talk about that? It's fascinating.
Oh. well, yeah. I mean, it comes from America anyway. It was I got into nearly 10 years ago now, and it was an article by Master Seligman, and it was all about character strengths. And it was kind of turned psychology on its head, and instead of focusing on the bads and what's wrong with the world and people, it was about the positive and what's good with people and people's strengths rather than their weaknesses. And for me as a counsellor, that was very refreshing because, you know, counselling, you're on about, you know, their problems and all the rest of it. And suddenly you can think about it in a whole new way. And so you can kind of use people's strengths to solve their problems, amazingly, rather than, you know, dwelling on the past and that kind of thing. So it changed, for me, it changed everything, even me personally. Yeah,
well, I like it. It's interesting to hear that it came from the United States because there are a lot of unhappy people here.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
They're everywhere. And it seems no matter where you are on the financial continuum, I'm talking a lot about continuums today, but it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. People can find plenty of things to be miserable about, and they do.
Oh, and, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No matter, you know, is that... I've got a moon on, you know, I want a moon and a stick. I've got that now, but I want chocolate on it as well. You know, it's kind of, sometimes people can, yeah, they just, I don't know, it's kind of about gratitude as well, I think. Being grateful for what you've got. And that's really, there's actually a science. There's, you know, lots of studies have been doing on gratitude and things like that, how that impacts on your well-being, your happiness, and of society in general, not just the individual. So, yeah, it's having quite a big impact, really.
It does take a bit of effort, though, to work at being happy. You have to make a conscious effort. It's so much easier to just fall down the dark path and say everything's terrible.
Some people are naturally pessimistic, say, but they can turn it around if they have an awareness, you know, have an awareness of how you think, and then you can learn to kind of work on those thought patterns and change them. It takes time, but it can be done, I would say. hence make the change. I believe people can change for the better, definitely.
Right. Well, one of the things that I try to focus on with my nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, is to bring people over to the happy reasons for eating plant foods. And, yeah. You know, I know I was just talking to the executive director of the Humane League, and they do concentrate on some of the dark side of the food business, all the terrible things that are going on in factory farming. And we have to discuss that from time to time. But I really like to reach out to people in terms of the joyful reasons to eat plants.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that, to be honest. I think one of the reasons I was vegetarian was because so that I could kind of look an animal in the eye again, you know? Yeah.
Very good point. I do. Whenever I see a cow, and it doesn't happen very often, but when I do, I can look them in the eye and say, I don't eat you or anything of you.
And it's also, if you're, you know, and to be an animal lover, and that's what I always struggle with, you know, as a teenager, say, to be an animal, I'm an animal lover, but I'm eating animals. And for me, it was just uncomfortable. And just to make that switch is just, you know, for me personally, it was a personal thing, you know. Not out to change the world, well, you know. But for me, it was a personal act that I could feel positive about, really. I could, you know, as I said, look an animal in the eye again without feeling guilty.
Now, I think I discovered tapas maybe in the early 90s. I didn't eat them, but I saw restaurants. I was living in France, and there was a tapas restaurant that I never went into. I just looked at the menu and thought, oh, this isn't for me. But I was curious because it looked so much fun.
Yeah.
So your book says 150 quick and delicious snacks and bites for sharing. And that's the first thing I like, the sharing.
Yes, absolutely. And I think because it's vegan, you can pretty much share it with everyone, you know?
So, that's right. It's the least common denominator.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you don't have to be vegan. And I make sure that they're nice and tasty and I enjoy eating them and they're not bland and, you know, and it's, I have this dream that a non-vegan would put on a spread without realizing that it was vegan and would appreciate, you know, and have non-vegan guests and they're all eating this food and then get to the end of the evening and go, hey, where was the meat? Because mm-hmm. they enjoy it so much. You know, that's my dream anyway.
Right. just the idea of little bites and little snacks so you can call, it can be a main meal of lots of little bites. It can be an appetizer. It can be party foods. These are just fun ideas.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, sometimes, like, even, like, the savory nuts, you can make a bowl of them in front of the TV, you know, and just share with your partner or whoever. It's just, and some of them are so quick that, yeah, you can just grab the book and... And I like having, you know, a bunch of snacks all in one place because a lot of cookbooks you get, you know, you may get the odd snack or dips or something is kind of part of a cookbook. But here they're all in one spot.
I want to talk more about some of your recipes, but one thing that caught my eye that I didn't know was you mentioned that sugar in the UK and Australia is always vegan.
Yeah.
I didn't know that because we do this crazy thing here in the United States where we filter in part of the process with sugar is it gets passed through charred animal bones. Why don't you do that?
It's amazing, isn't it? Because when I first read about vegan sugar and I'm thinking, what does this mean? Sugar isn't vegan? And a bit more research and yeah, it's only in America.
Only in America.
But I tell you, Australia likes to put animals in all sorts of food products, though, but amazingly not sugar. So.
And do you know any more about it? Is there another product that is used, or they just skip that product and maybe your sugar isn't as white?
I don't know. I guess they just have a different process.
Fascinating. It's crazy. Yeah. Because it's so frustrating. There are so many steps in food production that if you knew about it, you would be so horrified and disgusted. And we know about some of them. I'm sure there are things we still don't know about. And it's a strange world we live in. Let's talk about, to start with, what are traditional tapas like, and what recipes are in your book that are more like the traditional Spanish tapas?
I guess things like the patatas bravas, which are potatoes and tomatoes. Let me think. What else have we got? Possibly empanadas, a pastry which I think is traditionally cheese, but obviously not in my recipe.
Okay. Not a problem. Well, I remember reading there was a potato dish that you said was more like a traditional tapas.
Yeah, patatas bravas, that's one, and that's kind of tomatoes and onions and potatoes, and that's possibly traditionally fried, but I don't fry the potato. I just cook it all together with the tomatoes, and it's kind of cubes of potato.
Right.
And you serve it in a bowl and help yourself, you know.
Now, one of the things that caught my eye, I just want to point out a few recipes that I thought were kind of fun. I've always loved onion rings, and I never eat them anymore.
Yeah.
And you have an onion ring recipe with polenta.
Yeah, cook the onions with polenta, pretty much, for a change, rather than, you know, batter. And it gives it a nice crispy, flavorsome, as I recall, I think I add some dried herbs to give it a bit of something extra. Yeah, it's crispy on the outside and yummy, yummy, yummy.
You have another recipe. Let's call them scotch eggs. And I'm not familiar with a scotched egg. So first tell me what a scotch egg is. And then tell me what your recipe is.
Okay, so a scotch egg traditionally is egg in the middle, a boiled egg in the middle, sausage meat over that, deep fried with breadcrumbs.
Oh, it sounds delicious.
Every deconstruct.
A heart attack in the morning. Okay.
Absolutely. So I did a vegetarian version, which was egg in the middle, potato on the outside, and breadcrumbs.
Mm.
But then because when I was converting these recipes and I decided that's what I wanted to do, I wanted to prove a point to myself that I could veganize all my vegetarian recipes. It was kind of, you know, so how am I going to go about this? And then I thought, well, okay, make the egg from potato. And so I made little balls of potato rounds, coloured them with turmeric to make it look like egg yolk.
Mm-hmm.
Covered that with a bit more potato shaped into an egg. And then I used, because that was a bit of an effort, and you freeze the balls. It's easy, but it just takes time. And then because of the time, I used vegan sausage mix. So any brand, your favourite brand, coated it in breadcrumbs, and then you fry that. And the great thing is when I first put the pictures on Facebook and showing friends, and they were like, how can it be a vegan scotch egg? And I was so pleased that it actually looked like a scotch egg, but there was no egg in it.
Oh, yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
I imagine... I'm always surprised to hear what similar products exist in the United States and are in other countries. But I'm sure there are vegan products that are in Australia that we've never seen either. I don't know if you know which ones those are. But do you have some Australian favorite vegan products?
There are a few, because actually that was an Australian product I used for that, and it was called Veggie Meal. But we do get a lot of imported now, happily, because when I first moved to Australia, there was nothing. But there are quite a few from the UK and America and Europe. I think there's something from Germany I was eating the other day. So,
right.
Yeah, it's amazing now that things have changed here a lot. So, and we actually have a vegan supermarket in the city, which was unheard of 5 years ago. So, and a lot of it is imported from overseas, actually.
What's it like if there are vegans in the United States that want to travel to Australia? Is it a friendly place to go?
It is. It's not. There's quite a few vegan restaurants, and they're always pretty busy. So there is a demand for it, I would say. It's when you go to the regular restaurants that sometimes you can struggle. Sometimes there may be not a single option, even a vegetarian option. It's it's shocking. And it doesn't make sense because you go to a vegan restaurant or cafe and always busy and lovely. And there's some good choices out there. And it's expanding. It's, I would say, in the last few years, it's changed completely. So that's good. That's always good and exciting.
Okay, let's get back to the book. I liked one of them just primarily because of the name, Squashed Squash.
Yeah, that's roasted squash. So that's easy. It's like, you know, you have your half a butternut squash. So you can roast, leave it, put it in the oven, roast it whole. So, you know, you can forget about it until it's all lovely and soft. Scoop it. I think I bind it with some cornflour. And then fry them off. And you've got the lovely roasted flavours of the squash. And because they're, like, turned into, like, patties, they're squash.
Right. Now, is there anything about a tapas that makes it officially a tapas? Does it have to be wrapped in something, or does it just have to be small? Is there something that defines it?
I think these days, no. I mean, probably traditionally it was just a small bites. I mean, I think the original of tapas came from to cover, and I think they covered, I think it was their glasses with pieces of meat. So things have changed a lot, really. And I noticed that over the years when you go to a tapas restaurant and it could be anything, and it seemed to be anything you can share. So that's why I thought, right, I need to do my own version of that.
So yeah, I like that. And anything you can share, that sounds good to me.
That's my definition. I think I like that.
Okay, another word that popped out that I never heard of was grissini.
Ah, breadsticks, essentially.
Yeah. You just call them grissini.
You can do, yeah. So they're kind of long, thin. Mine are quite quite chewy and quite soft. But you probably, I don't know, you may come across them in restaurants. They're kind of like bready, biscuity, long biscuity sticks. But mine are more chewy than that.
Okay.
Far preferable than the ready-made.
And then you also have dessert bites, little bits and things.
Absolutely.
And I think that's really important. I know that when I like to make big dinners, I always like to, after I've stuffed everybody with so much food, I like to come out with like 4 or 5 cakes and pies and cookies, and everybody's like, oh, my God. And they all want to try. They want a piece of everything, but it's just too much.
Yeah.
But little bites are nice.
So here you can slice, you know, and you will, and I think I recommend that you cut things fairly small. So you have small squares of things or mini, say, cheesecakes. So that, yeah, so you can put out a pile of different things and have a little bit of everything without being overwhelmed. Well, maybe not everything.
Very nice, very nice. Are you planning any more cookbooks after this?
I think so. I think I'm going to go on to lunches next.
You're going to go on to what next?
Veggie lunches.
Okay.
Yeah. That's mainly, again, that's for me, my personal thing, when I suddenly dawned on me that I was just ate a sandwich every day for lunch. I'm thinking I need to, you know, I've got a massive variety of dinners and breakfasts and all that, but lunch is for me, so I'm right, I'm going to crack on with that. So that's what that's coming about.
That's a good idea. I think the continuous theme that I'm always hearing, and it does apply to lunch, people want something that's quick and something that's easy to make. And I struggle with that because I think food is important. Nourishment is important. I think we all deserve to take the time to make healthy, delicious, nutritious food for ourselves, but so many people just don't have the time or the knowledge or the energy. And and quick is that word I continue to hear over and over and over.
I know. But actually, that's kind of how I got the book Visions, so that you plan, it's already the night before, so you plan it the night before, and sometimes there will be bits you plan in advance so that you've got enough for a few lunches. So, yeah, and it is actually shopping lists and the whole thing, and it is with quick in mind, so people don't have to think. They can just go, grab the book and, you know, follow the guide.
Right.
We'll see how it goes.
So have you ever been in the U.S.?
Yeah, actually, I was in San Francisco and Vegas last year. Vegas isn't very vegan-friendly.
It certainly is. And where did you eat in San Francisco?
Oh, I can't remember.
Did
the
you
name.
Go to the Millennium?
No.
Oh, well, it's closing, so you missed it.
There was, I remember, what was it called? Can't remember what its name was. Garden, maybe? I can't remember something. Mm. But it was a bit too far up from San Francisco. And like, the menu looked great, but we never got there.
Oh,
we weren't
okay.
long enough. But yeah, I remember reading this menu thinking, oh, I know what I'd eat. I went there. Alas. But yeah, San Francisco was good.
Mm, well, I have not been to Australia, and I definitely want to get there someday.
Yeah, well, it would be lovely.
Yes, and it's good to know that I won't starve when I get there.
No, you shouldn't do. Things have changed. Things are a lot better. Depends where
right.
you go.
Well, Julia, thank you. I'm so glad we were able to connect, and I really enjoyed looking at your book and seeing all the fun things that there are to make and share and eat. Thank
Brilliant.
You.
Brilliant.
Good
chat.
Yeah, so now you can get dressed and start your day.
Absolutely. Have a good night.
All right.
You.
Take care.
Cheers. Bye.
Okay. Bye. That was Julia Barnard, and you can find her at vegantapas.com, and that was fun. Her book is an ebook, so it's easy to find and easy to get. So in the last few minutes, I want to review a few things. Are you keeping up with my What Vegans Eat blog? It's been a really fun project, and I hope you're getting something out of it. If you are, if you're not reading it, I hope you visit it. It's really quick, and it's just throwing out all these ideas about food, because all I'm doing is telling you what I eat every day, because people seem to need ideas and don't know what to do. But it's all part of a process, healthy eating. It doesn't just happen, and it doesn't just happen for some people. It's easier for others, and some people really struggle with it. But to begin with, you have to plan your week, and you have to make sure you have the right food in order to build whatever it is you're going to be eating throughout the week. And people always want quick, I know. And if you have the right building blocks, it can be quick. So I put out there all these different ideas. Some things take longer than others because I don't mind preparing food. But a lot of these things can be quick. I think one of the secrets is making big pots of things, making a big pot of a bean soup or stew, making big pots of whole grains, making that'll last 3 or 4 or 5 days so that you can just reheat them or grab them and they're quick. And dressings, salad dressings that you can easily toss with greens. And my favorite dressings lately, I'm just kind of nuts about them, and they're really easy, is just to take a sunflower seed or a pumpkin seed, blend them up with water, and you can flavor them any way you like. Sometimes I'll blend them up with a vinegar, red wine vinegar, balsamic vinegar, apple cider vinegar. They all get different flavors. You can add a little miso if you like miso, and there are so many different misos that each one you use will give a different flavor. You can add herbs and spices or just plain the way it is. It's a nice creamy dressing, and it'll last 3 or 4 days, and It's easy and it's great on greens. We have a couple of those recipes on the website. One we call Seed Caesar. It's one of my favorites. And then we have Little Seed Caesar. And a creamy balsamic dressing. They're all really easy and fun. And I made a treat a few days ago, and here's something I'm really excited about. Now, this is not the healthiest thing, but I don't think it's so bad. I didn't have any chocolate in the house, and we like to have a little square of dark chocolate in the evening just to kind of finish the day, a little nice, sweet taste on the palate with all of the wonderful antioxidants and vitamins that you can get from chocolate. And we didn't have any, but I did have cocoa. And I made a chocolate sauce, and I just made a little of it one day, and it was so good that I made a lot more of it the next day and pretty much had a little bit of it all week long. If you're curious about it, you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com. The recipe is on the recipe blog. It's very simple. Cocoa, a little sugar, that's vegan sugar, of course, and coconut oil and water, and I cook that all up, and it becomes a beautiful, shiny, silky sauce, and when you refrigerate it, it becomes like a frosting or a spread. And I just use a little bit on things, and it's so, so delicious. Of course, I hope you've watched the chocolate report, which is at Responsible Eating and Living, so you can learn about what the right chocolates are to eat and what to avoid. Well, it looks like we're at the end of the program, and I just want to talk all day about food, but I can't. So we'll be back next week, and have a delicious week.